Yeah, if I breathed smoke for 5 or 6 hours, I'd probably have some visions all right, Mike said, and they all laughed. The visions were supposed to tell the tribe what to do, Ben said. And I don't know if this part is true or not, but the book said that most times the visions were right. A silence fell, and Richie looked at Bill. He was aware that they were all looking at Bill, and he had the feeling, again, that Ben's story of the smoke hole was more than a thing you read about in a book and then had to try for yourself, like a chemistry experiment or a magic trick. He knew it, they all knew it. Perhaps Ben knew it most of all. This was something they were supposed to do. They were supposed to have visions. Most times, the visions were right. Richie thought, I'll bet if we asked him, Haystack would tell us that book practically jumped into his hand, like something wanted him to read that one particular book, and then tell us about the smoke hole ceremony. Because there's a tribe right here, isn't there? Yeah, us. And yeah, I guess we do need to know what happens next. This thought led to another. Was this supposed to happen? From the time Ben got the idea for an underground clubhouse instead of a treehouse, was this supposed to happen? How much of this are we thinking up ourselves, and how much is being thought up for us? In a way, he supposed such an idea should have been almost comforting. It was nice to imagine that something bigger than you, smarter than you, was doing your thinking for you, like the adults that planned your meals, bought your clothes, and managed your time. And Richie was convinced that the force that had brought them together, the force that had used Ben as its messenger to bring them the idea of the smoke hole, that force wasn't the same as the one killing the children. This was some kind of counterforce to that other, to... Oh, well, you might as well say it. It. But all the same, he didn't like this feeling of not being in control of his own actions, of being managed, of being run. They all looked at Bill. They all waited to see what Bill would say. You no, he said. That sounds really neat. Beverly sighed, and Stan stirred uncomfortably. That was all. Really neat, Bill repeated, looking down at his hands, and perhaps it was only the uneasy flashlight beam in Ben's hands or his own imagination, but Richie thought Bill looked a little pale and a lot scared, although he was smiling. Maybe we could use a vision to tell us what to do about our problem. And if anyone has a vision, Richie thought, it will be Bill. But about that, he was wrong. Well, Ben said, it probably only works for Indians, but it might be flippy to try it. Yeah, we'll probably all pass out from the smoke and die in here, Stan said gloomily. That'd be really flippy, all right. You don't want to, Stan? Eddie asked. Well, I sort of do, Stan said. He sighed. I think you guys are making me crazy, you know it. He looked at Bill. When? Bill said, well, no to time like the present, is there? There was a startled, thoughtful silence. Then Richie got to his feet, straight-arming the trap door open and letting in the muted light of that still summer day. I got my hatchet, Ben said, following him out. Who wants to help me cut some green wood? In the end, they all helped. 3. It took them about an hour to get ready. They cut 4 or 5 armloads of small green branches from which Ben had stripped the twigs and leaves. They'll smoke all right, he said. I don't even know if we'll be able to get them going. Beverly and Richie went down to the bank of the Kanduskeag and brought back a collection of good-sized stones using Eddie's jacket. His mother always made him take a jacket, even if it was 80 degrees. It might rain, Mrs. Kasprak said, and if you have a jacket to put on, your skin won't get soaked if it does. As a makeshift sling. Carrying the rocks back to the clubhouse, Richie said, You can't do this, Bev. You're a girl. Ben said it was just the braves that went down on the smoke hole, not the squaws. Beverly paused, looking at Richie with mixed amusement and irritation. A lock of hair had escaped from her ponytail. She pushed out her lower lip and blew it off her forehead. I could wrestle you to a fall any day, Richie, and you know it. That don't matter, Miss Scarlet, Richie said, popping his eyes at her. You was still a girl, and you was always gonna be a girl. You sure ain't no Injun brave. I'll be a brave vet then, Beverly said. Now, are we going to take these rocks back to the clubhouse, or am I going to bounce a few of them off your asshole skull? Lawks a mussy, Miss Scarlet. I ain't got no asshole in my skull, Richie screeched, and Beverly laughed so hard she dropped her end of Eddie's jacket and all the stones fell out. She scolded Richie all the time they were picking them up again, and Richie joked and screeched in many voices and thought to himself how beautiful she was. Although Richie had not been serious when he spoke of excluding her from the smoke hole on the basis of her sex, Bill Denbrough apparently was. She stood facing him, her hands on her hips, her cheeks flushed with anger. You can just take that and stuff it with a long pole, stuttering Bill. I'm in on this, too. Or aren't I a member of your lousy club anymore? Patiently, Bill said, It's not like that, Bev, and you know it. Somebody has to stay up here. Why? Bill tried, but the roadblock was in again. He looked at Eddie for help. It's what Stan said, Eddie told her quietly, about the smoke. Bill says that might really happen. We could pass out down there. Then we'd die. Bill says that's what happens to most people in house fires. They don't burn up. They choke to death in the smoke. Now she turned to Eddie. Well, okay. He wants somebody to stay up on top in case there's trouble. Miserably, Eddie nodded. Well, what about you? You're the one with the asthma. Eddie said nothing. She turned back to Bill. The others stood around, hands in their pockets, looking at their sneakers. It's because I'm a girl, isn't it? That's really it, isn't it? Bet. You don't have to talk, she snapped. Just nod your head or shake it. Your head doesn't stutter, does it? Is it because I'm a girl? Reluctantly, Bill nodded his head. She looked at him for a moment, her lips trembling, and Richie thought she would cry. Instead, she exploded. Well, fuck you! She whirled around to look at the others, and they flinched from her gaze, so hot it was nearly radioactive. Fuck all of you if you think the same thing. She turned back to Bill and began to talk fast, rapping him with words. This is something more than some diddly shit kids game like tag or guns or hide-and-go-seek, and you know it, Bill. We're supposed to do this. That's part of it. And you're not going to cut me out just because I'm a girl. Do you understand? You better, or I'm leaving right now. And if I go, I'm gone. For good. You understand? She stopped. Bill looked at her. He seemed to have regained his calm, but Richie felt afraid. He felt that any chance they had of winning, of finding a way to get to the thing that had killed Georgie Denbrough and the other kids, getting to it and killing it, was now in jeopardy. 7, Richie thought. That's the magic number. There has to be 7 of us. That's the way it's supposed to be. A bird sang somewhere, stopped, sang again. All were right, Bill said, and Richie let his breath out. But somebody has to stay to Hopside. Who wants to do it? Richie thought Eddie or Stan would surely volunteer for this duty, but Eddie said nothing. Stan stood pale and thoughtful and silent. Mike had his thumbs hooked into his belt like Steve McQueen and Wanted Dead or Alive, nothing moving but his eyes. Come on, Bill said. And Richie realized that all pretense had gone out of the thing now. Bev's impassioned speech and Bill's grave, too old face had seen to that. This was a part of it, perhaps as dangerous as the expedition he and Bill had made to the house at 29 Niebolt Street. They knew it, and no one was backing down. Suddenly, he was very proud of them, very proud to be with them. After all the years of being counted out, he was counted in, finally counted in. He didn't know if they were still losers or not, but he knew they were together. They were friends, damn good friends. Richie took his glasses off and rubbed them vigorously with the tail of his shirt. I know how to do it, Bev said, and took a book of matches from her pocket. On the front, so tiny you'd need a magnifying glass to get a really good look at them, were pictures of that year's candidates for the title of Miss Rheingold. Beverly lit a match and then blew it out. She tore out 6 more and added the burned match. She turned away from them, and when she turned back, the white ends of the 7 matches poked out of her closed fist. Pick, she said, holding the matches out to Bill. The one who picks the match with the burned head stays up here and pulls the rest out if they go flippy. Bill looked at her levelly. This is how you want it? She smiled at him then, and her smile made her face radiant. Yeah, you big dummy, this is how I want it. What about you? I love you, Bev, he said, and color rose in her cheeks like hasty flames. Bill did not appear to notice. He studied the match tails sticking out of her fist, and at length he picked one. Its head was blue and unburned. She turned to Ben and offered the remaining six.
I love you too, Ben said hoarsely.
His face was plum-colored. He looked like he was on the verge of a stroke, but no one laughed. Somewhere deeper in the barrens, the bird sang again.
Stan would know what it was, Richie thought randomly. Thank you, she said, smiling,
and Ben picked a match. Its head was unburned. She offered them to Eddie next. Eddie smiled, a shy smile that was incredibly sweet and almost heartbreakingly vulnerable.
I guess I love you too, Bev, he said,
and then picked a match blindly. Its head was blue. Beverly now offered the four match tails in her hand to Richie.
I loves you, Miss Scarlet,
Richie screamed at the top of his voice and made exaggerated kissing gestures with his lips. Beverly only looked at him, smiling a little, and Richie suddenly felt ashamed.
I do love you, Bev, he said and touched her hair. You're cool.
Thank you, she said.
He picked a match and looked at it, positive he'd picked the burned one, but he hadn't. She offered them to Stan.
I love you, Stan said, and plucked one of the matches from her fist.
Unburned.
You and me, Mike, she said, and offered him his pick of the two left.
He stepped forward.
I don't know you well enough to love you, he said, but I love you anyway. You could give my mother shouting lessons, I guess.
They all laughed, and Mike took a match. Its head was also unburned.
I guess it's you after all, Bev, Bill said.
Looking disgusted, all that flash and fire for nothing, Beverly opened her hand. The head of the remaining match was also blue and unburned.
You jiggered them, Bill accused.
No, I didn't.
Her tone was not one of angry protest, which would have been suspect, but flabbergasted surprise.
Honest to God, I didn't.
Then she showed them her palm. They all saw the faint mark of soot from the burned match head there.
Bill, I swear in my mother's name.
Bill looked at her for a moment and then nodded. By common, unspoken consent, they all handed the matches back to Bill. Seven of them, their heads intact. Stan and Eddie began to crawl around on the ground, but there was no burned match there.
I didn't,
Beverly said again, to no one in particular.
So what do we do now? Richie asked.
We all go down, Bill said, because that's what we're supposed to do.
And if we all pass out? Eddie asked.
Bill looked at Beverly again.
If Bev's to telling the truth, and she is, we won't.
How do you know? Stan asked.
I just to do.
The bird sang again. 4. Ben and Richie went down first, and the others handed the rocks down one by one. Richie passed them on to Ben, who made a small stone circle in the middle of the dirt clubhouse floor.
Okay, he said, that's enough.
The others came down, each with a handful of green twigs they'd cut with Ben's hatchet. Bill came last. He closed the trap door and opened the narrow hinged window.
There, he said.
There's our smoke hole. Do we have any kindling?
You can use this if you want,
Mike said, and took a battered Archie funny book out of his hip pocket.
I read it already.
Bill tore the pages out of the funny book one by one, working slowly and gravely. The others sat around the walls, knee to knee and shoulder to shoulder, watching, not speaking. The tension was thick and still. Bill laid small twigs and branches over the paper and then looked at Beverly.
You got them matches, he said.
She lit one, a tiny yellow flare in the gloom.
Darn thing probably won't catch anyway, she said in a slightly uneven voice, and touched a light to the paper in several places.
When the match flame got close to her fingers, she tossed it into the center. The flames blazed up yellow, crackling, throwing their faces into sharp relief, and in that moment Richie had no trouble believing Ben's Indian story. And he thought it must have been like this back in those old days, when the idea of white men was still no more than a rumor or a tall tale to those Indians who followed buffalo herds so big they could cover the earth from horizon to horizon. Herds so big that their passing shook the ground like an earthquake. In that moment, Richie could picture those Indians, Kiowas or Pawnees or whatever they were, down in their smoke hole, knee to knee and shoulder to shoulder,
watching as the flames guttered and sank into the green wood like hot sores, listening to the faint and steady sss of sap oozing out of the damp wood, waiting for the vision to descend. Yeah, sitting here now, he could believe it all. And looking at their somber faces as they studied the flame and the charring pages of Mike's Archie funny book, he could see that they believed it too. The branches were catching. The clubhouse began to fill up with smoke. Some of it, white as cotton smoke signals in a Saturday matinee movie starring Randolph Scott or Audie Murphy, escaped from the smoke hole. But with no moving air outside to create a draft, most of it stayed below. It had an acrid bite that made eyes sting and throats throb. Richie heard Eddie cough twice, a flat sound like dry boards being whacked together, and then fall silent again. He shouldn't be down here, he thought. But something else apparently felt otherwise. Bill tossed another handful of green twigs on the smoldering fire and asked in a thin voice that was not much like his usual speaking voice, "Anyone having any vivid visions?" "Visions of getting out of here," Stan Ura said. Beverly laughed at this, but her laughter turned into a fit of coughing and choking. Richie leaned his head back against the wall and looked up at the smoke hole, a thin rectangle of mellow white light. He thought about the Paul Bunyan statue that day in March, but that had only been a mirage, a hallucination, a vision. "Smoke's killing me," Ben said. "Woo!" "So leave," Richie murmured, not taking his eyes off the smoke hole. He felt as if he was getting a handle on this. He felt as if he had lost 10 pounds, and he sure as shit felt as if the clubhouse had gotten bigger. Damn straight on that last. He had been sitting with Ben Hanscom's fat right leg squashed against his left one and Bill Denbrough's bony left shoulder socked into his right arm. Now he was touching neither of them. He glanced lazily to his right and left to verify that his perception was true, and it was. Ben was a foot or so to his left. On his right, Bill was even farther away. "Place is bigger, friends and neighbors," he said. He took a deeper breath and coughed hard. It hurt, hurt deep in his chest, the way a cough hurt when you had the flu or the grip or something. For a while, he thought it would never pass, that he would just go on coughing until they had to pull him out. If they still can, he thought. But the thought was really too dim to be frightening. Then Bill was pounding him on the back, and the coughing fit passed. "You don't know you don't always," Richie said. He was looking at the smoke hole again instead of at Bill. How bright it seemed. When he closed his eyes, he could still see the rectangle floating there in the dark, but bright green instead of bright white.
Well, what do you mean?
Bill asked.
Stutter.
He paused, aware that someone else was coughing, but not sure who it was.
You ought to do the voices, not me, Big Bill. You...
The coughing got louder. Suddenly the clubhouse was flooded with daylight, so sudden and so bright Richie had to squint against it. He could just make out Stan Uris climbing and clawing his way out.
"Sorry,"
Stan managed through his spasmodic coughing.
"Sorry, can't."
"It's all right," Richie heard himself say. "You don't need no stinking batches." His voice sounded as if it were coming from a different body. The trapdoor slammed shut a moment later, but enough fresh air had come in to clear his head a little. Before Ben moved over a little to fill the space Stan had vacated, Richie became aware of Ben's leg again, pressing his. How had he gotten the idea that the clubhouse had gotten bigger? Mike Hanlon threw more sticks on the smoky fire. Richie resumed taking shallow breaths and looking up at the smoke hole. He had no sense of real time passing, but he was vaguely aware that, in addition to the smoke, the clubhouse was getting good and hot. He looked around, looked at his friends. They were hard to see, half swallowed in shadow smoke and still white summer light. Bev's head was tilted back against a piece of shoring, her hands on her knees, her eyes closed, tears trickling down her cheeks toward her earlobes. Bill was sitting cross-legged, his chin on his chest. Ben was... But suddenly Ben was getting to his feet, pushing the trap door open again.
"There goes Ben," Mike said.
He was sitting Indian fashion directly across from Richie, his eyes as red as a weasel's. Comparative coolness struck them again. The air freshened as smoke swirled up through the trap. Ben was coughing and dry retching. He pulled himself out with Stan's help, and before either of them could close the trap door, Eddie was staggering to his feet, his face a deadly pale except for the bruised-looking patches under his eyes and traced just below his cheekbones. His thin chest was hitching up and down in quick, shallow spasms. He groped weakly for the edge of the escape hatch and would have fallen if Ben had not grabbed one hand and Stan the other.
Sorry,
Eddie managed in a squeaky little whisper, and then they hauled him up. The trap door banged down again. There was a long quiet period. The smoke built up until it was a thick, still fog in the clubhouse.
Looks like a pea super to me, Watson, Richie thought,
and for a moment he imagined himself as Sherlock Holmes, a Holmes who looked a great deal like Basil Rathbone and who was totally black and white, moving purposefully along Baker Street. Moriarty was somewhere near, a hansom cab awaited, and the game was afoot. The thought was amazingly clear, amazingly solid. It seemed almost to have weight, as if it were not a little pocket daydream of the sort he had all the time. Batting cleanup for the Bo Sox, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, and there it goes, it's up, it's gone. Home run, Tozier, and that breaks the Babe's record. But something that was almost real. There was still enough of the wiseacre in him to think that if all he was getting out of this was a vision of Basil Rathbone as Sherlock Holmes, then the whole idea of visions was pretty overrated. Except, of course, it isn't Moriarty that's out there. It's out there. Some it, and it's real. It. Then the trap door opened again, and Beverly was struggling her way out, coughing dryly, one hand cupped over her mouth. Ben got one hand, and Stan grabbed her under the other arm. Half pulled, half scrambling under her own power, she was up and gone.
It is Behigger, Bill said.
Richie looked around. He saw the circle of stones with the fire smoldering within, fuming out clouds of smoke. Across the way, he saw Mike sitting cross-legged like a totem carved from mahogany, staring at him through the fire with his smoke-reddened eyes. Except Mike was better than 20 yards away, and Bill was even farther away on Richie's right. The underground clubhouse was now at least the size of a ballroom.
Doesn't matter, Mike said. It's going to come pretty quick. Something is.
Yeah, Bill said, but I...
He began to cough. He tried to control it, but the cough worsened, a dry rattling. Dimly, Richie saw Bill stumble to his feet, lunge for the trap door, and shove it open.
Good la-la-la.
And then he was gone, dragged up by the others.
Looks like it's you and me, old Mikey, Richie said,
and then he began to cough himself.
I thought for sure that it would be Bill.
The cough worsened. He doubled over, hacking dryly, unable to get his breath. His head was thudding, whacking, like a turnip filled with blood. His eyes teared behind his glasses. From far away, he heard Mike saying,
"Go on up if you have to, Richie. Don't go flippy. Don't kill yourself."
He raised a hand toward Mike and flapped it at him.
"No stinking batches,"
in a negative gesture. Little by little, he began to get the coughing under control again.
Mike was right. Something was going to happen, and soon. He wanted to still be here when it did.
He tilted his head back and looked up at the smoke hole again. The coughing fit had left him feeling lightheaded, and now he seemed to be floating on a cushion of air. It was a pleasant feeling. He took shallow breaths and thought,
"Someday I'm going to be a rock and roll star. That's it, yes, I'll be famous. I'll make records and albums and movies. I'll have a black sport coat and white shoes and a yellow Cadillac. And when I come back to Derry, they'll all eat their hearts out, even Bowers. I wear glasses, but what the fuck? Buddy Holly wears glasses. I'll bop till I'm blue and dance till I'm black. I'll be the first rock and roll star to ever come from Maine. I'll..."
The thought drifted away. It didn't matter. He found that now he didn't need to take shallow breaths. His lungs had adapted. He could breathe as much smoke as he wanted. Maybe he was from Venus. Mike threw more sticks on the fire. Not to be outdone, Richie tossed on another handful himself.
"How you feeling, Rich?" Mike asked.
Richie smiled.
"Better. Good, almost. You?"
Mike nodded and smiled back.
"I feel okay. Have you been having some funny thoughts?"
"Yeah. Thought I was Sherlock Holmes for a minute there. Then I thought I could dance like the Dovells.
Your eyes are so red you wouldn't believe it, you know it?
Yours, too. Just a couple of weasels in the pen, that's what we are."
"Yeah?
Yeah.
You want to say all right?
All right. You want to say you got the word?
I got it, Mikey."
"Yeah, okay." They grinned at each other, and then Richie let his head tilt back against the wall again and looked up at the smoke hole. Shortly, he began to drift away.
No, not away. Up. He was drifting up. Like, float down here we all. A balloon. You guys all were right?
Bill's voice coming down through the smoke hole. Coming from Venus, worried. Richie felt himself thud back down inside himself.
All right, he heard his voice, distant, irritated. All right, we said all right. Be quiet, Bill. Let us get the word. We want to say we got the
world. Word. The clubhouse was bigger than ever, floored now in some polished wood. The smoke was fog thick, and it was hard to see the fire.
That floor, Jesus come please us. It was as big as a ballroom floor in an MGM musical extravaganza.
Mike looked at him from the other side, a shape almost lost in the fog.
You coming, old Mikey? Right here with you, Richie. You still want to say all right? Yeah, but hold my hand. Can you catch hold? I think so.
Richie held his hand out, and although Mike was on the far side of this enormous room, he felt those strong brown fingers close over his wrist.
Oh, that was good. That was a good touch. Good to find desire in comfort, to find comfort in desire, to find substance in smoke, and smoke in substance.
He tilted his head back and looked at the smoke hole, so white and wee. It was farther up now, miles up, Venusian skylight. It was happening. He began to float.
Come on, then, he thought,
and began to rise faster through the smoke, the fog, the mist, whatever it was. 5. They weren't inside anymore. The two of them were standing together in the middle of the barrens, and it was nearly dusk. It was the barrens, he knew that, but everything was different. The foliage was lusher, deeper, savagely fragrant. There were plants he had never seen before, and Richie realized some of the things he had first taken for trees were really giant ferns. There was the sound of running water, but it was much louder than it should have been. This water sounded not like the leisurely flow of the Kanduskeag stream, but more the way he imagined the Colorado River would sound as it cut its way through the Grand Canyon. It was hot, too. Not that it didn't get hot in Maine during the summer, and humid enough so that sometimes you felt sticky just lying in your bed at night, but this was more heat and more humidity than he had ever felt in his whole life. A low mist, smoky and thick, lay in the hollows of the land and crept around the boy's legs. It had a thin, acrid smell like burning green wood. He and Mike began to move toward the sound of the running water without speaking, pushing their way through the strange foliage. Thick, ropey lianas lay between some of the trees like spidery hammocks, and once Richie heard something go crashing off through the underbrush, it sounded bigger than a deer. He stopped long enough to look around, turning in a circle, studying the horizon. He knew where the standpipe's thick white cylinder should have been, but it wasn't there. Neither was the railroad trestle going over the train yards at the end of Niebold Street, or the old Cape housing development. Low bluffs and red sandstone outcroppings of rock bulged out of thick stands of giant fern and pine trees where the old Cape should have been. There was a flapping noise overhead. The boys ducked as a squadron of bats flapped by. They were the biggest bats Richie had ever seen, and for a moment he was more terrified than he had been even when Bill was trying to get Silver rolling and he had heard the werewolf closing in on them from behind. The stillness and the alienness of this land were both terrible, but its awful familiarity was somehow worse.
No need to be scared, he told himself. Remember that this is just a dream or a vision or whatever you want to call it. Me and old Mikey are really back in the clubhouse, goofed up on smoke. Pretty soon, Big Bill is going to get nervous from the soivus because we're not answering anymore, and he and Ben will come down and haul us out. It's just like Conway Twitty says, only make-believe.
But he could see how one of the bat's wings was so ragged the hazy sun shone through it, and when they passed beneath one of the giant ferns, he could see a fat yellow caterpillar trundling across a wide green frond, leaving its shadow behind it. There were tiny black mites jumping and sizzling on the caterpillar's body. If this was a dream, it was the clearest one he had ever had. They went on toward the sound of the water, and in the thick, knee-high ground mist, Richie was unable to tell if his feet were touching the ground or not. They came to a place where both the mist and the ground stopped. Richie looked, unbelieving. This was not the Kanduskeag, and yet it was. The stream boiled and roiled through a narrow water course cut through that same crumbly rock. Looking across to the far side, he could see ages cut into those stacked layers of stone, red and then orange and then red again. You couldn't walk across this stream on stepping stones. You'd need a rope bridge, and if you fell in, you would be swept away at once. The sound of the water was the sound of bitter, foolish anger, and as Richie watched, slack-jawed, he saw a pinkish-silver fish jump in an impossibly high arc, snapping at the bugs that made shifting clouds just above the surface of the water. It splashed down again, giving Richie just time enough to register its presence and to realize he had never seen a fish exactly like that in his whole life, not even in a book. Birds flocked across the sky, squalling harshly. Not a dozen or two dozen. For a moment, the sky was so dark with birds that they blotted out the sun. Something else crashed through the bushes, and then more things. Richie wheeled, his heart thudding painfully in his chest, and saw something that looked like an antelope flash by, heading southeast. Something's going to happen, and they know it. The birds passed, presumably alighting somewhere on moss farther south. Another animal crashed by them, and another. Then there was silence, except for the steady rumble of the Kanduskeag. The silence had a waiting quality about it, a pregnant quality Richie didn't like. He felt the hairs shifting and trying to stand up on the back of his neck, and he groped for Mike's hand again. "Do you know where we are?" he shouted at Mike. "You got the word?" "Jesus, yes," Mike shouted back. "I got it. This is a go, Richie, a go." Richie nodded. A go, as in once upon a time, long, long ago, when we all lived in the forest and nobody lived anywhere else. They were in the barrens as they had been God knew how many thousands of years ago. They were in some unimaginable past before the Ice Age, when New England had been as tropical as South America was today. If there still was a today. He looked around again, nervously, almost expecting to see a brontosaurus raise its crane-like neck against the sky and stare down at them, its mouth full of mud and dripping uprooted plants, or a saber-toothed tiger come stalking out of the undergrowth. But there was only that silence, as in the 5 or 10 minutes before a vicious thunder squall strikes, when the purple heads stack up and up in the sky overhead, and the light turns a queer, bruised purple-yellow, and the wind dies completely, and you can smell a thick aroma like overcharged car batteries in the air. We're in the ago, 1 million years back, maybe, or 10 million, or 80 million. But here we are, and something's going to happen. I don't know what, but something. And I'm scared, and I want it to end, and I want to be back. And Bill, please pull us out. It's like we fell into the picture, some picture. Please, please help. Mike's hand tightened on his, and he realized that now the silence had been broken. There was a steady low vibration. He could feel it more than hear it, working against the tight flesh of his eardrums, buzzing the tiny bones that conducted the sound. It grew steadily. It had no tone. It simply was. The word in the beginning was the word, the world, the... A tuneless soulless sound. He groped for the tree they stood near, and as his hand touched it, cupped the curve of the hole, he could feel the vibration caught inside. At the same moment, he realized he could feel it in his feet, a steady tingling that went up his ankles and calves to his knees, turning his tendons into tuning forks. It grew and grew. It was coming out of the sky. Not wanting to, but unable to help himself, Richie turned his face up. The sun was a molten coin burning a circle in the low-hanging overcast, surrounded by a fairy ring of moisture. Below it, the verdant green slash that was the barrens lay utterly still. Richie thought he understood what this vision was. They were about to see the coming of it. The vibration took on a voice, a rumbling roar that built to a shattering crescendo of sound. He clapped his hands to his ears and screamed and could not hear himself scream. Beside him, Mike Hanlon was doing the same, and Richie saw that Mike's nose was bleeding a little. The clouds in the west lit with a bloom of red fire. It traced its way toward them, widening from an artery to a stream to a river of ominous color, and then, as a burning falling object broke through the cloud cover, the wind came. It was hot and searing, smoky and suffocating. The thing in the sky was gigantic, a flaming match head that was nearly too bright to look at. Arcs of electricity bolted from it, blue bullwhips that flashed out from it and left thunder in their wake. "A spaceship!" Richie screamed, falling to his knees and covering his eyes. "Oh my God, it's a spaceship!" But he believed, and would tell the others later, as best he could, that it was not a spaceship, although it might have come through space to get here. Whatever came down on that long-ago day had come from a place much farther away than another star or another galaxy. And if spaceship was the first word to come into his mind, perhaps that was only because his mind had no other way of grasping what his eyes were seeing. There was an explosion then, a roar of sound followed by a rolling concussion that knocked them both down. This time it was Mike who groped for Richie's hand. There was another explosion. Richie opened his eyes and saw a glare of fire and a pillar of smoke rising into the sky. "It!" he screamed at Mike, in an ecstasy of terror now. Never in his life, before or after, would he feel any emotion so deeply, be so overwhelmed by feeling. "It! It! It!" Mike dragged him to his feet, and they ran along the high bank of the Young Kanduskeag, never noticing how close they were to the drop. Once Mike stumbled and went skidding to his knees. Then it was Richie's turn to go down, barking his shin and tearing his pants. The wind had come up, and it was pushing the smell of the burning forest toward them. The smoke grew thicker, and Richie became dimly aware that he and Mike were not running alone. The animals were on the move again, fleeing from the smoke, the fire, the death in the fire. Running from it, perhaps. The new arrival in their world. Richie began to cough. He could hear Mike beside him, also coughing. The smoke was thicker, washing out the greens and grays and reds of the day. Mike fell again, and Richie lost his hand. He groped for it and could not find it. "Mike!" he screamed, panicked, coughing. "Mike, where are you? Mike! Mike!" But Mike was gone. Mike was nowhere. "Richie! Richie! Richie!" "Wacko!" "Richie! Richie! Are you..." "Six." "All right?" His eyes fluttered open, and he saw Beverly kneeling beside him, wiping his mouth with a handkerchief. The others, Bill, Eddie, Stan, and Ben, stood behind her, their faces solemn and scared. The side of Richie's face hurt like hell. He tried to speak to Beverly and could only croak. He tried to clear his throat and almost vomited. His throat and lungs felt as if they had somehow been lined with smoke. At last he managed. "Did you slap me, Beverly?" "It was all I could think of to do," she said. "Wacko," Richie muttered. "I didn't think you were going to be all right is all," Bev said, and suddenly burst into tears. Richie patted her clumsily on the shoulder, and Bill put a hand on the back of her neck. She reached around at once, took it, squeezed it. Richie managed to sit up. The world began to swim in waves. When it steadied down, he saw Mike leaning against a tree nearby, his face dazed and ashy pale. "Did I puke?" Richie asked Bev. She nodded, still crying. In a croaking, stumbling Irish cop's voice, he asked,
"Get any on ye, darlin'?"
Bev laughed through her tears and shook her head.
"I turned you on your side. I was afraid. Afraid you'd choke on it."
She began to cry hard again.
No fair, Bill said, still holding her hand. I'm the one who hutters around here.
"Not bad, Big Bill," Richie said. He tried to get to his feet and sat down again heavily. The world was still swimming. He began to cough and turned his head away, aware that he was going to retch again only a moment before it happened. He threw up a mess of green foam and thick saliva that mostly came out in ropes. He closed his eyes tight and croaked,
"Anyone want a snack?"
"Oh, shit," Ben cried, disgusted and laughing at the same time.
"Looks more like puke to me,"
Richie said, although in truth his eyes were still tightly shut.
"The shit usually comes out the other end, at least for me. I don't know about you, Haystack."
When he opened his eyes at last, he saw the clubhouse about 20 yards away. Both the window and the big trap door were thrown open. Smoke, thinning now, puffed from both. This time Richie was able to get to his feet. For a moment he was quite sure he was going to retch again, or faint, or both.
"Wacko,"
he murmured, watching the world waver and warp in front of his eyes. When the feeling passed, he made his way over to where Mike was. Mike's eyes were still weasel red, and from the dampness on his pants cuffs, Richie thought that maybe old Mikey had taken a ride on the stomach elevator, too.
"For a white boy, you did pretty good,"
Mike croaked, and punched Richie weakly on the shoulder. Richie was at a loss for words, a condition of exquisite rarity. Bill came over. The others came with him.
"You pulled us out?"
Richie asked.
Mami and Baben. You were screaming. But both of you, but...
He looked over at Ben. Ben said,
"It must have been the smoke, Bill." But there was no conviction in the big boy's voice at all.
Flatly, Richie said, "You mean what I think you mean?"
Bill shrugged.
Well, what's the that, Richie?
Mike answered,
"We weren't there at first, were we? You went down because you heard us screaming, but at first we weren't there."
"It was really smoky," Ben said. "Hearing you both screaming that way, that was scary enough, but the screaming, it sounded, well,
it sounded very far away," Bill said,
stuttering badly. He told them that when he and Ben had gone down, they hadn't been able to see either Richie or Mike. They had gone plunging around in the smoky clubhouse, panicked, scared that if they didn't act quickly, the two boys might die of smoke poisoning. At last, Bill had gripped a hand, Richie's. He had given a hell of a yank, and Richie had come flying out of the gloom, only about one quarter conscious. When Bill turned around, he had seen Ben with Mike in a bear hug, both of them coughing. Ben had thrown Mike up and out of the trap door. Ben listened to all this, nodding.
"I kept grabbing, you know. Really not doing anything except jabbing my hand out like I wanted to shake hands. You grabbed it, Mike. Damn good thing you grabbed it when you did. I think you were just about gone."
"You guys make the clubhouse sound a lot bigger than it is," Richie said.
"Talking about stumbling around in it and all. It's only 5 feet on every side."
There was a moment's silence when they all looked at Bill, who stood in frowning concentration.
"It was a bigger," he said at last.
Wasn't it, Ben?"
Ben shrugged.
"It sure seemed like it, unless it was the smoke."
"It wasn't the smoke," Richie said. "Just before it happened, before we went out, I remember thinking it was at least as big as a ballroom in a movie. Like one of those musicals, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, something like that. I could barely see Mike against the other wall."
"Before you went out?" Beverly asked.
"Well, what I mean, like..."
She grabbed Richie's arm.
"It happened, didn't it? It really happened. You had a vision, just like in Ben's book."
Her face was glowing. "It really happened." Richie looked down at himself and then at Mike. One of the knees of Mike's corduroy pants was out, and both the knees of his own jeans were torn. He could look through the holes and see bleeding scrapes on both his knees.
"If it was a vision, I never want to have another one," he said. "I don't know about the kingfish over there, but when I went down there, I didn't have any holes in my pants. They're practically new, for gosh sakes. My mom's going to give me hell."
"What happened?"
Ben and Eddie asked together. Richie and Mike exchanged a glance, and then Richie said,
"Bevy, you got a smoke?"
She had two, wrapped in a piece of tissue. Richie put one of them in his mouth, and when she lit it, the first drag made him cough so badly that he handed it back to her.
"Can't," he said. "Sorry."
"It was the past," Mike said.
"Shit on that," Richie said. "It wasn't just the past. It was a go."